Okay, I'm going to call to order the California Water Commission meeting of Wednesday, October 21, 2015. If you could please call the roll.
Is this on? Okay, thank you. Commissioner Ball.
Present.
Commissioner Byrne.
Here.
Commissioner Curtin. Commissioner Del Bosque.
Here.
Commissioner Daniels. Commissioner Herrera.
Here.
Commissioner Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Quintero.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great, thank you. At this time, I think item number 3 on the agenda, I'm going to defer because Commissioner Daniels has some comments to the minutes and some additions, and she indicated in a text I just got that she should be here in about 15 minutes. So we'll move on to item number 4, which is the executive officer's report.
Thank you. One of the things that came up at our last commission meeting and I was asked to follow up on was SB 83, which was public access to well completion reports. The Department of Water Resources established a program within the last year called OSCR, affectionately called OSCR. It's OSWCR, Online Submittal of Well Completion Reports. That was happening independent of SB 83. And the OSCR, the intent of OSCR was to get all incoming new well logs from drillers to be submitted electronically as opposed to the handwritten copies, which had been the practice prior to that. The Department of Water Resources has close to 800,000 well completion reports that are paper copies. And this SB 83 was intended to make that data available publicly. The well completion reports have always been confidential. Access to them has been to public agencies doing studies or to individuals with approval of the well owner. And even in those cases, the owner's name and address has been redacted from the scanned images. So SB 83 did not remove the confidentiality clause. So the Department of Water Resources is combining their OSCR system with this new law and with their existing backlog, not backlog, their existing log, log of logs. But before they can make that readily available to the public, they do have to, again, redact the name and address of the owners. So that is where it is right now. The OSCR program did go live on October 2nd. There's been a positive response from well drillers. They're excited about having a new 21st century way of entering their information. And the program can come to the commission and give an update at a later time when they have further implemented SB 83. The other thing that I wanted to mention is I've said in the past that we were in the process of hiring new legal counsel, which we have done. Our new legal counsel is Holly Stout here. She started 2 days ago. She's a local. She lives in Yuba City, so that's this. We're easing her in from that perspective. But until she gets a little more oriented, we have Spencer Kenner from the Department of Water Resources as acting legal counsel today, and he was, in fact, the commissioner's counsel in the past, so this is an easy fit for him. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Paula. Good to see you, Spencer, and welcome, Holly. Easy group. No problems with us, I'm sure. Anyway, at this time, we got kind of into it, but I want to welcome everybody and also say thank you to our host, which are the City of Yuba City. I see a number of familiar faces, and for those of you who are not folks who are coming up for the meeting from Sacramento but are actually local to here, thank you for the hospitality. We're very happy to be here. We've been having a variety of meetings in different locations to try to communicate the message as to what we're doing and give people a flavor of the process that we're going through to implement Chapter 8 and look at the water bond and look at the Sustainable Groundwater Management Agency Act as we are today as well. So I welcome you, and this is the time actually when we're going to have public comment. So if there's any other comments that members would like to make, please feel free, or if not, I welcome public comments. I know we have a few, so please come forward. Beth or Brent, are we? Okay. Well, it looks like all of our comments are on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act item. So if there's no general public comment, then we'll move on and just get into our business, and I will call the public comments as the time arises when that item is called. Last chance for public comment on anything that's not on the agenda generally? Okay, great. Okay, this time I'll go back to item number 3 on the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes. We had moved that. Commissioner Daniels, I just saw your text and thought we'd just leave it for you, so I'll open it up to you for your comments.
Thank you very much, and thank you for holding that item. My apologies for being a little bit late. I did have a chance to review the minutes, and I do appreciate the effort that it takes to put minutes together when we have day-long meetings, and in fact, 2-day-long meetings. But I had recalled making a few comments that I didn't quite see reflected, and I want to make this suggestion to make some changes with, again, great appreciation for the work of staff in trying to compile the minutes. It's hard to know what's an offhand comment versus a for-the-record comment versus whatever, and we do make quite a few comments over the course of a couple of days. But there's something that I felt it'd be important to be reflected in the minutes, and it was in our session in the afternoon of September 17th. So I did ask for a transcript, which is an audio transcript, and I tried to get to all of the comments, but I wasn't able to hear it all. Every time I paused, it would go back to the beginning, so I was able to hear our comments over and over again. I felt a little bit like Groundhog Day, but I was finally able to get to one of the places that I was interested in. So I have a very specific addition at page 7 of the meeting minutes for Thursday, September 17th. If I have this right. I have it in the wrong place. It's for the Wednesday afternoon one. So it's the page regarding environmental compliance. My apologies. It's for Wednesday, September 16th, at page 11. One more time, at page 10. Sorry about that. So after the sentence where it says the technical team and commission will need to discuss these on a case-by-case basis, there was some more discussion, and there was a point that I made regarding at least expressing an intention, and this is in the section where we talk about existing mitigation and compliance and whether or not there would be bond funds used to pay for those. So there was quite an involved discussion. And we were going back and forth on how to address that. And there was a comment that I wanted reflected in the record. So I'm going to make this suggestion that we amend the minutes at that sentence after the third to the last paragraph that ends, the technical team and commissions will need to discuss these on a case-by-case basis. And before the next paragraph, which starts with staff proposed developing a potential third option. So in between that, I'd like to suggest this, and this comes from the audio tape. Commissioner Daniels recommended that there be a clear statement of intention in the regulation that notwithstanding any direction to evaluate certain scenarios on a case-by-case basis, comma, the commission intends only to fund public benefits that are newly created, regardless of whether there was an option for a case-by-case determination. Commissioner Byrne agreed with this statement, although expressed concern as to how to word it. Commissioner Herrera agreed. That's my suggestion for additions. Now, there was continued discussion after that, but I wanted the record to at least reflect that communication.
Anyone have any comments? Or I have no problems with that. I have no recollection of agreeing, but it sounds reasonable. And if that is what you heard in going through, then I think that's fine. So if you want to just have that be a motion to approve the minutes with that amendment, then I'll entertain a second. Second. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Great. Minutes are approved. Thank you, Commissioner Daniels. Okay, moving on to the next item on the agenda, which is item number 7, which is the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, consideration of adoption of the guidelines on boundary adjustments. And we've got Stephen Springhorn. He's been with us many times before, and Mr. Gutierrez as well. Great. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. We'd like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to come to you today. This is an important point in our regulations of the basin boundaries we've been discussing for several months over the last several months. And today we're going to give you a presentation, and we're going to kind of cover a couple of things, and it's going to be kind of a split presentation between myself, Dave Gutierrez. I've been acting as the executive program manager of the entire Sustainable Groundwater Management Program of Department of Water Resources, and Stephen Springhorn has been our project manager, and I think has met with you several times over the last several months to discuss the basin boundaries. We're at a point where, at the end of this presentation and later on in the meeting, Stephen's going to be requesting that you consider adoption of these basin boundary regulations. So what we're going to do today is hopefully a repeat, and I think pretty much every slide you're going to see today is a slide you've seen possibly in a different format, but pretty much the same slide that you've seen throughout the last several months. So hopefully that the presentations that we're going to talk to you about is kind of a repeat. So I'm going to first talk a little bit about summary of the emergency regulations, the development, how we kind of went through the process. Again, you've heard that. And then Stephen's going to kind of come through, and he's going to kind of give you kind of the overall objective and where we kind of landed on the basin boundaries. And again, I think that's going to also be a repeat of things that you've already heard in the past. And then Stephen's going to talk a little bit about future steps specific to the basin boundaries. And I'll kind of talk a little bit about some of the other items that you're going to be seeing from us right after this. So we've got some important things right on the heels of this one, and we're anxious to get to those as well. So this is the first slide, and again, this should be a very familiar slide that you've seen over the last several months. And it's an important slide because what this slide basically shows is it shows the responsibilities that the various folks have in implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And specifically, it's the Department of Water Resources roles, the State Water Resource Control Board roles, and the locals' roles. And we highlight where we are, basin boundaries. So this one's right up front. It's one of the most important ones that we have up front. And the reason why it's so important is it's really going to set the unit of how the governance structures are going to work in the future, these groundwater sustainability agencies. So they're going to have to manage around a particular unit, and what that unit is these basin boundaries. And so what this gives folks an opportunity to do is make sure those basin boundaries are in the most efficient way possible, and these regulations are there to address that. Now, right on the heels of this is the Groundwater Sustainability Plan regulations. And this is the one that we'd like to actually come back right to you probably next meeting. So this next one is going to be very complex and in some cases a bit controversial. And so what we want to do is we want to start showing you right away what we're doing on the Groundwater Sustainability Plans. We'd like to telegraph the approach that we're taking to you as we start figuring it out. So I'd like to come back probably next month, and our project managers are going to start getting into that, into the detail, and we're going to be coming for asking you for adoption, not for several months from now, but it's so complex, I think we have to start having that discussion right now. And then finally, the groundwater sustainability agencies, and Stephen's going to show you a slide later, and it's going to be basically all revolves around why do we need these basin boundary regulations adopted today? And he's going to show you a slide, and it really reflects on the fact that the groundwater sustainability agencies need to understand that in order to move forward. So Stephen's going to cover that in detail. I think you've also seen a slide like this before, and I think what we're going to do is just kind of remind you these are actually emergency regulations. They are outlined like that in the statute. And that means there's very little OAL involvement or requirements along with emergency regulations. Now, the reason I show this slide is the fact that both the basin boundaries and the groundwater sustainability plans and in the entire act of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act may have to adapt as we go. It's new. It's may have to adapt as we learn new things. That includes the basin boundary regulations. In the future, if we have to modify the basin boundary regulations, it's going to stay an emergency rulemaking process in perpetuity. So if we need to change something, we're going to come back just like the way we're doing this, and we may possibly modify these particular basin boundary regulations in the future. Again, the applicability of these, remember that this new regulation for basin boundaries will be applicable to all 515 groundwater basins throughout the state and state of California. But I'll remind you that the focus of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act and the requirements of the act are really on those high and medium priority basins. And the low and very low are more of a voluntary basis. And as a result of that, we truly expect that most of the changes that are going to be requested by the local agencies this round will most likely be from the medium and high priority basins. You've seen this cartoon several times before. Again, a reminder, a basin. What's a basin? Remember, I like to actually explain a basin, and I like to look at it or think of it in terms of a bowl. A basin's a bowl, and it's a three-dimensional bowl. So over geologic times, this bowl got filled up with sediments, and along with these sediments is water, and that's basically a basin. And so we have to remember that it's a three-dimensional effect. It's not just the edges of the bowl, which you would see from a plan view, but it's also the bottom of the bowl, and we have to consider that, and we've defined that. And that's really the scientific basis of a basin. Now, there's also sub-basins in the state of California. As far as the Act goes, it really doesn't distinguish too much between a basin and a sub-basin. But it's important to understand here because a sub-basin, although can be divided by a scientific basis, it's basically a jurisdictional boundary oftentimes. So I like to think of the entire Central Valley as one big, gigantically huge basin that probably can't be managed effectively with it being so big. And so the department over the years has broken these up into sub-basins. Why is this important? Because the basin boundary modifications, as you have already been presented, can be changed on both a scientific and a jurisdictional basis. And again, Stephen's going to cover that a little bit in more detail. The last time I was actually in front of the commission, I think, was in March, and I showed you this chart. And this was an important schematic to show you the fact of how we're going to have to institute these particular regulations. Not only these regulations, the groundwater sustainability regulations. So I think it's all reflecting on the key principle. The key principle of the Act is the fact that groundwater is best managed at the local level. The Department of Water Resources bought into that right away. We agree with that key principle. And as a result of that, although the statutes only required us to go out and do three public meetings towards the end to get comments on the regulations, we knew that wasn't going to work. And so what we've done is we've developed, I thought, a very robust communication and outreach plan. We went, and we're going to show you, we've been all over the state meeting all types of groups. And the intention was never to come to a consensus on regulations. I think that would probably be an impossible task. But what we did want to do is we wanted to have a common understanding of what the issues are, and we wanted to telegraph our approach to the different groups. We wanted to be as transparent as we possibly can throughout this entire process. And I've often told folks, well, maybe not everyone is going to be happy, but you're all going to know exactly what we're doing. So that was, I think, our approach. What we've done is we've developed these advisory groups that you've heard about over the last several months. We had a dozen or so advisory groups. We've also had partners, including the commission, the State Water Resources Control Board. We've met with federal agencies, public in general, and in some cases, one-on-one meetings. So this approach was intended to get that common understanding, which we thought was extremely important to have successful regulations. And that's all on that key principle and the fact that the locals are going to be hopefully sustainably managing basins in the future. Now, you've seen this chart before as well. This kind of goes hand in hand with the previous chart. And so the idea is we didn't want to get to the end. We wanted to actually start on square one. And so square one was that scoping part. We met with the groups, and we weren't interested in finding out what needed to be in the regulations at first. What we were more interested in is just what are the issues. Let's just get that common understanding of what the issues are. We met with the groups. We took that information. We start drafting some key principles of our own. We drafted some discussion papers to get the discussion going around what needs to be in a regulation. We then re-met with the various groups and the various individuals. And then we used that information to actually draft the initial regulations. We put that out yet again. We met with the groups. We got input. And then we used all that to make the final regulations. And that's what's in front of you today. And that's what we're going to be asking you to consider adopting today. And so that's where we are in October. And that's kind of how we got there. Now, this graph pretty much shows the same thing, kind of in a more timeline. We've been here at this commission, I think, five times. This is, our sixth time at the commission. And again, our idea was to bring you along every step of the way, every step that we think out. We wanted you to kind of follow along with what we were trying to accomplish. We did that with the public as well. We did that initially with public listening sessions, and then we did that later with the required public meetings throughout the state. The green dots on the bottom indicate the various advisory groups that we've gone throughout the state in order to accomplish what we were trying to accomplish in the first place, and that is get that common understanding of the issues. So today we land in October, where we're going to be hopefully asking you to consider adoption of these regulations. And then Stephen's going to cover a little bit more detail about submitting the basin boundaries to OAL and what's encompassed in that, and then what's next for the basin boundaries to get to the final approval. Now, this is kind of the same information in just a different format, because it's not only important to get a discussion going with the various groups and the various interests and the various stakeholders, but we thought also it's important on a geographical basis. And so we've done extensive stakeholder outreach throughout the state. We followed you around the state in the various commission meetings. We've attended those meetings. We've had public listening sessions, again, and throughout the state, in the north, the central, and the southern part of the state. We have our advisory groups, and we broke the advisory groups up into interests and expertise. And in addition to that, we've also have advisory groups, again, different parts of the state, who have different issues that we needed to thought we needed to understand. And I think these advisory groups were very helpful in getting that common understanding. And then that kind of related to the final step, and this is the formal input that we received through the public comment period. We had three public meetings, again, throughout the state in the north, central, and southern part of the state. We had a 49-day comment period. Those public meetings were in Sacramento, Bakersfield, and Santa Ana. As a result of that, we got 38 comments, and what I mean by 38 comments, meaning comments from 38 different groups or individuals, and that was kind of also good to see in the sense that we got a broad input of comments. So we got the different interests. This shows tribal groups, the regional and local government agencies, the NGOs, the public water systems, and the public. And we got that input, again, geographically throughout the state. So we feel that we've got a really good coverage of kind of the input. We think we have a great common understanding of what the issues are on basin boundaries, and as a result, I think we've got a pretty good regulation that we're putting here in front of you. Now, what I'd like to do is kind of end before I give this off to Stephen. I think the Department of Water Resources owes some thanks to a few folks. I think, first of all, our advisory groups and the individuals that actually spent a lot of time with us over the last several months. So it's not only the Department of Water Resources that spent time to do this, but a lot of individuals spent their own time understanding what we were trying to accomplish. They met with us on several occasions, and I can't thank them enough for being able to get us to where we got, and I think it's a really good approach that we're really happy with in getting these particular regulations. I think I also have to thank the commission. I'd like to give special thanks to Paula Landis and David Orth to help guide us to make sure that we get the information to the commission that is necessary for you to do your job and hopefully adopt these regulations. So a lot of thanks goes out. Now, obviously, we're not done. We actually got a lot of work to do behind us. So we're actually very thankful that we started out with these basin boundary regulations, because I'm certainly not going to say they were easy. This was a lot of work. However, the next set is going to be extremely complex, very difficult. And so we've actually already started attacking that problem. So we're ready to kind of come back in here and start going over that with you. And so we want to kind of start bringing you along just exactly the same format that we did with these basin boundary regulations. We're also doing the same approach that we did the basin boundary regulations. We've been meeting with the advisory groups. We're trying our hardest to get that common understanding. We're trying our hardest to be as transparent as possible. We're trying to telegraph the approach that we're taking, and we're going to continue with that process. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Stephen, who's going to kind of go over some of the details, and then we're here to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Good morning, members of the commission. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. So What I'm going to do today is, as David mentioned, is just present an overview of the regulations and the process that these regulations establish that you're very familiar with, and just to give you an overview of the final regulations as they're currently up for consideration. And I wanted to start at the beginning, the most fundamental level of what the requirements are for these regulations in the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And this is really the foundation that we built these regulations from. And it's, as you know, an emergency regulation that allows local agencies to request changes to basin boundaries with the deadline of the first of next year. And there's four key components or instructions that local agencies need to provide the technical information to justify these changes. And that's really centered around information to demonstrate sustainability in these proposed basins, the technical information of the new boundaries and the conditions in those basins, and then consultation with those interested local agencies and public water systems that are affected by these changes. So the regulations really build off of these and add specifics to these four components. And they also establish the methodology and criteria of how we're going to assess that information for the three key criteria that are laid out in the Act. And that's the likelihood that the proposed basin can be sustainably managed, and whether the proposed basin would limit sustainable management in adjacent basins, and then whether there's a history of sustainable management of groundwater levels in the proposed basin. So those were the rules that were set in SGMA for us to follow, and we followed them and built the regulation off of them. So our overall approach and the process that's established by these regulations really stems off of the existing authority that the department has through decades that the department has defined and delineated these basin boundaries. And it started all the way back in the 50s, where the first groundwater basins were defined, and through subsequent updates of Bulletin 118, the boundaries have been updated with the best available information at the time. And with the current version of Bulletin 118 being the 2003 version. So with the enactment of SGMA, it really elevated the importance of these boundaries. And because of that, the Act established this new process for local agencies to request the department make these changes. And because now sustainable groundwater management is required in these high and medium basins, as I mentioned, these boundaries now mean a lot more. And we also, the department wants to collect the information at the local level from these agencies and from interested stakeholders to make the best or most informed decision on approving these boundary revisions. And then the last component is, as David mentioned, we feel that communication and collaboration at the local level is important for all aspects of SGMA, and particularly for these regulations. We feel that in order to get that understanding of how these boundaries could affect the locals, we want to have that stakeholder input. And we feel that these three components will result in sustainable groundwater management moving forward. So these are a sequence of slides that you're very familiar with, and I just wanted to highlight them one last time, potentially, on what the final regulation process is. And it starts with the existing basins as they're described in Bulletin 118. And if a local agency does not request a boundary modification, then the current basins and boundaries will be carried through to the next version of Bulletin 118, estimated to be published in the first quarter of 2017. And an important note is that, and it's been a common comment through this regulation process, is that the question on, is this the only opportunity to revise basin boundaries? And this is this current process or revision process is the first of multiple opportunities to revise basins into the future. And this slide highlights some of the reasons why we established the process that we did, with the initial window being 3 months. And it really, as David mentioned, it stems off of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency deadline. And that's a very important deadline in the Act. And we worked backwards from that because the locals need to know certain that their boundary modification requests are either approved or not approved well in advance of that deadline. So that's where we worked backwards, and that's where we landed through stakeholder input with that initial 3-month window. The other reason we had to batch these or have a window, an open and closed window, is there's subsequent steps or actions that are triggered now when boundaries are changed. The first is we have to evaluate them and come up with a draft list of approved basin requests. The commission now, or the department is now required to present those changed boundaries to the commission for hearing and comment. That's a 60-day window. And basin prioritization occurs any time that we change basin boundaries. So we want to, the regulation is written in a way to be flexible, to respond to the demand at the local level of boundary modifications, but we also have to balance that with the actions that are triggered by changing basin boundaries. So that's where, into the future, we can have, if there's demand at the local level, we could have additional windows opening up in between Bulletin 118 updates, and then our target is linking these into the future with Bulletin 118 updates, or more frequent as needed.
Stephen, quick question on that re-triggering of the designations. Mm-hmm. So if the basin boundary adjustment occurs, then you'd explained to me earlier there's kind of a formula that you look at is how to classify them. So all of the basins are, I assume that all of them wouldn't change, and most of them wouldn't at all, but is that what you're saying is that the entire set of basins is looked at in the context of how that one has changed, and then whatever falls out, falls out?
That's correct. And so that's the current basin prioritization process that's established in Water Code 10933. It has a series of data that they use to determine the priority. And any time a boundary is changed, the whole basin, all basins have to be reprioritized because they're all relative to each other. And a lot of that prioritization is based on the area of the basin. And so if the area of that basin changes, which will most likely affect adjacent basins, the whole set is reprioritized.
Got it. So not knowing that we're not the computer and or whatever the formula is, it absent a significant change in boundaries, it's unlikely that the vast majority of any basins would be changed. Or is that an accurate statement? No?
That's an accurate statement.
Okay.
There is a caveat that with the enactment of SGMA, we have to look at a few additional components as part of the prioritization, and those new components will be rolled into the next prioritization that occurs.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So if a local agency wants to make a request, they come into this process, and these blue arrows represent stakeholder input opportunities into the process. The first one is an initial notification. We feel this is important to promote coordination of these boundary requests at the local level, as well as giving to the department a heads up on what might be coming to us so we can resource and staff up if needed to re-evaluate these requests in a timely fashion. The two main types or categories of revisions are scientific and jurisdictional. The scientific are based on the geologic or hydrologic conditions that define the basin. The jurisdictional are ones that promote sustainable groundwater management. And as David mentioned earlier in those graphics, it shows the difference between those two. Just a few additional graphics. The scientific modifications, really these are what defines the basin. So new geologic maps could come to us and we could revise the external boundary of a basin, or the identification of new flow barriers within the basin that could be used for scientific modifications. There are three types of jurisdictional modifications. The first is internal. These are the more minor, you could say, changes between adjacent basins, the shared boundaries between adjacent basins. Basin consolidation, we've been messaging all along that we feel this is a potential advantage because it's increasing management area and potential tools and solutions locals might have moving forward with the implementation of the Act. And the last category is basin subdivision. And again, we're required to allow for creation of new sub-basins, so that's why this is in here. But we have been messaging again that this could be a potential disadvantage at the early onset of SGMA implementation if basins are fragmented or going from one to many basins. So there's a high bar for local support for this type of change, as well as a high bar for the technical merits on whether it would promote sustainable management. The next component is the required information, technical information, needed for justification of a boundary modification. And it's broken into three components. The first component is local information. And that's really information on the local agency. And again, only local agencies can request a boundary change through this process. And that there's a board resolution that initiates those at the local level. That what that does is it requires at least one public meeting at the local level for each boundary modification. There's also additional notification and consultation pieces, and again, this is where stakeholders can enter into this process and voice their support or opposition. The second component is local agency input, as well as public water system input. For the scientific, internal, and consolidation changes, it's really a function of the requesting agency notifying those affected by the change and providing an opportunity to support or oppose. And the subdivision has a special requirement for it has to be supported by 75% of all of the local agencies and public water systems in the affected basin. So that's a high bar. It's not unanimous for a few reasons of we don't want one or two local agencies being able to leverage all the others. And again, this is just to get into the process. Then the department will evaluate those based on their technical merits on whether they'll promote sustainable management. Then finally, the technical information. And there's a tiered approach to what is required for the technical information. And as we've discussed in the past, this is more of an exercise of gathering existing information. And we know this is a tight time frame for multiple reasons. And that's why we feel that these requirements could be complied with by gathering the existing information that's on the ground in these basins. The next step is that stakeholder input that I mentioned earlier on our overall process. Once a requesting agency submits their request to the department, that will open a 30-day window for us to receive. Any person can comment in support or opposition to these boundary requests, and the department will consider that information in our evaluation. The next step is our evaluation of these. The department will come up with a draft list of approved boundary requests. We will hold at least one public meeting to solicit public comments. And then, as mentioned previously, the department is now required to present boundary changes to the commission for your hearing and comment. We plan to have a briefing sheet for each boundary request that provides a background of the technical rationale of why we approved it and all comments that came in on it. So the commission should have a good understanding of each request that you're hearing and commenting on. So through that process, then the department will approve the final boundary requests and publish them in Bulletin 118. So just a few more slides that this really gets at the technical assistance and data availability. And we recognize that SGMA and implementation of SGMA is going to be a heavy lift for local agencies and interested entities, and that's why the department is going to strive to provide as much technical assistance as we can. And in particular, for these regulations, we have a number of supporting documents and tools for locals to help them navigate and understand this process. And we also are striving to have this an open and transparent process, and the data is available for people to access. And the two components of a, sort of a clearinghouse approach is our website and a interactive map tool that will allow people to visualize where these requests are coming in and understand the connection between the geology, other relevant boundaries, and other relevant information. So we feel that will be important. And once adopted or finalized, we plan to hold a public workshop in the remaining months to help the locals understand the final rules of this process to help them, again, navigate the regulation. So next steps, where are we heading, and the roles and responsibilities? And as David mentioned, and we are here today for your consideration of adoption of these regulations, and that's the role of the commission, is to adopt these regulations. And then if adopted, the department will submit those regulations or that package to the Office of Administrative Law to be finalized in the October-November timeframe. which we then can start open up the window for these revision requests. And then September, summer 2016, the department will approve, and that's the department's responsibility is to approve the boundaries, taking into consideration your comments from the commission and public comments. And then once we finally approve the boundaries, we'll publish them in Bulletin 118. And if needed, as David mentioned, in the future, if any revisions to these regulations need to occur, again, the responsibility of the commission is to readopt if necessary. So with that, I'd like to close by thanking the commission and Executive Officer Landis and commission staff for your continued attention to this important component of SGMA and your valuable feedback we've received over the last several months. This feedback, along with the public input we've got from the advisory groups, was very helpful for us and helped us craft, we feel, a workable regulation that works at the local level as well as for the department. And for a few reasons, we feel it's ready for adoption, that it complies with the requirements of the Act, that it's consistent with the intent of the Act of to promote basin-wide and statewide sustainable groundwater management. And again, that this has been a open process, and we've considered the input from the commission and a broad group of stakeholders that we've been receiving comments and letters of support from. So we feel we're well positioned, and we are asking you for your adoption. So again, thank you very much, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Commissioner.
I do have one question. I have a ton of comments, but let me start with a question. In that last slide, Stephen, where you walked through the next steps,
yep.
And you may have addressed this in your presentation, I just missed it. After this initial window is open, clearly the GSAs are going to go out now and start working on, based on an understanding of what their new planning area will be, preparation of their plans, which will include collection of data. Very probable that they'll collect data that suggests a subsequent adjustment. So when do you think the next window will be open? And then I'm also assuming that every time you do a proposed adjustment to boundaries that the commission will have an obligation to hear and comment on any subsequent changes.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. So on the first question, again, the regulations are flexible. We can open these submission and evaluation periods when necessary, and to manage that demand on the ground. We could potentially open one in the 2018 timeframe if necessary. If we realize that we're overwhelmed with these, there's a lot of demand on the ground, and that there's still demand that's left over, we could entertain that intermediate window opening. But again, we're trying to balance having enough windows open and the ability to change boundaries with the effects of changing boundaries. And to your second point, anytime the department opens one of these windows, sort of the final step will be bringing a draft list to the commission for your hearing and comment on. We'll consider those comments before the boundaries are finalized.
I certainly have been convinced over time that this isn't a matter of making a line change on a map and then moving forward, that there's a bunch of subsequent actions by DWR, and I fully appreciate that and support kind of the schedule that you've presented to us. As I continue to talk about this in various areas, people, and I think you know this, struggle with the flexibility of all of this as we move forward. So I think challenges for all of us are going to be ongoing demand as data is collected to open windows, and we'll have to figure out how to effectively manage that without having that consume us,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
If I can, I would like to comment that, you know, I think your commitment to communication and stakeholder engagement was a high success, and I think it sets the bar very well for the next set of regs that are going to be a lot more difficult, as both you and David have observed. So I do want to compliment you on the outreach strategy and in the engagement. I know you spent a lot of miles and a lot of hours with a lot of different people, but it's reflected in what I think is a clear and responsive draft. As I read these and with a very good understanding of what SGMA is all about, the act and what was intended as it was drafted, I think I have not found anything in here that isn't consistent with that. I think it aligns very nicely with the provisions of the act and the expectations of the drafters. This is a critical first step, as you've said, and I think it's important. But I think this overall, I think you've done a tremendous job, and it sets the tone very favorably for the next level of work. So I compliment both you and David for and your team for the work that you've done here.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate those comments, and again, to echo, we appreciate the feedback we've received from the commission. And I'd also like to thank David and our sort of management team for setting out the vision for these, and the whole team behind the scenes that have helped us develop these regulations. So thank you.
Additional member comments, questions? Commissioner Daniels?
I just wanted to join in the appreciation. It's been this is a very complex process, and it's actually moved through our processes quite smoothly, and I want to give you credit for that, for laying out the information in a way that was very clear and understandable, that helped us grapple with some fairly complex issues, but gave us a high degree of confidence in what was being presented and discussed, particularly at the stakeholder level. So it's very laudable, and I want to compliment you on it. And I think the fact that I've noticed the letters from various groups, including a letter dated October 13 from a number of environmental groups, that the fact that we have such unanimity of support, I think, is a testament to that process. So thank you for that.
Thank you for those comments. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Herrera.
Actually, the comments that Paula just mentioned are very aligned with what I was just going to say as well. I just want to, thank staff for all of the time that you have invested in this. And I know that at the last meeting I had some concerns around the public input process, and also with lowering the bar of for subdivision request. And, based on my read of the regulations, I feel comfortable with that. And I, too, am very appreciative of all of the time that the stakeholders have invested, as well as staff. And I think that when we as a commission get letters, from the stakeholders saying that they're in support, that means a lot. And that's exactly the type of incorporation of comments that I like to see, as we move forward with the development of other regulations. So thank you for that.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner,
I certainly agree with everything that my fellow commissioners have said. And one of the things that I look forward to for all of us is a time when we are able to see literally a three-dimensional model of these basins. I mean, when you talk about the complexity of these basins, looking at the sketches that we have in here, which, it's astonishing to really think about what they look like. I mean, I literally imagine, this three-dimensional image that we can all look at in the room, and each basin is going to be different, and there's going to be, a surprising number of features in there that few of us are thinking about right now. And I really appreciate the flexibility that's built into continuing to bring in current scientific information to help in the jurisdictional management of those basins. So, again, thank you very much for all the work that you've done.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Herrera.
Yeah, one closing comment. I also was glad to hear that moving forward, we're going to continue to get briefings, from the staff on how you're moving forward with developing the next set of regulations. I think staff so far has done a very great job of keeping us, up to date on how the stakeholder engagement process has been going. And there's a lot of issue documents, papers that are, drafted now and up for public comment. I know it's almost impossible for us as commissioners to read every single one of them. So having you all come before us, makes that process a lot easier. And it also provides another opportunity for the public to come and, provide their comments directly to us. And I know that some of that public some public comments have already been submitted, and so For those that are in the audience, if there are already set of comments that have been developed, I certainly would appreciate, you know, having those comments be made available to the commissioners so that we have the opportunity to review that as your staff is also receiving those.
Okay, thank you. And as David mentioned, we are working on, you know, over the next several commission meetings, we plan to be briefing the commission and starting the process in that communication and understanding of the next set of regulations, which, again, are going to be very complex. So that's our plan. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other comments, I'll just quickly say I thought you did an excellent job. I won't say what everyone else said again, but ditto. And I also would want to reiterate what Mr. Orth had said. The one thing I've been hearing is about people who are formulating the GSAs now, and they're not going to really know whether they want to do adjustments. So I think that next period of when we open is going to be something to think about, important, and it sounds like we're already contemplating that. So, all right. Great. We do have public comment, which we do prior to having a vote. So if there are any members of the public, I've got a few cards, which I'll call out, and then if there's anyone else, please feel free. Valerie Kincaid? Sure, that'd be great. Thanks, Valerie. SJTA.
Thank you, Commission. Valerie Kincaid from the San Joaquin Tributaries Authority. The authority is made up of five irrigation districts and the city and county of San Francisco, Modesto, Turlock, Merced, South San Joaquin, and Oakdale irrigation districts. And really today we rarely come and support DWR and everything that they do, but DWR has really outreached to SJTA, and we appreciate the outreach so much that we made it a point to be here. We support the commission adopting these basin boundary regulations, and I just want to kind of tail on the comment that everyone's made about DWR outreach, and I think it's important for two reasons. One is it's always important to talk to locals about outreach and regulation, but really probably the more important issue here is SGMA is a real game changer, obviously, for water districts, and folks on the ground have been very nervous and ready to be highly critical of this new law. And DWR certainly has the laboring oar in the beginning part of SGMA. And they've really done an excellent job of outreach and as much as possible calming folks down at the local level and having someone between Trevor and Stephen and David always available for the SJTA to reach out to. So we just want to say thank you, and we support the commission's adoption and approval of these regulations. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Valerie, for making the trip as well. Okay, David Boland from Aqua.
Thank you, Chair Byrne, Commissioners. David Boland, Association of California Water Agencies. We're 430 public water agencies up and down the state, many of which are involved in groundwater management in an intimate sort of way and have a real investment in seeing the success of SGMA. And just want to express my pleasure at being able to say that we fully support the current regulations. We appreciate the fact that, again, that DWR has worked really hard to reach out to meet with public water agencies in different settings. And we've had a kind of inside joke about the fact that they see some of the same people in some different outreach meetings. But we have had the department engage with Aqua. We have these committees. We have our groundwater committee, which is representative of folks all over the state, highly professional folks, consultants, as well as managers and science-based folks. And those folks have provided some content. Early on, it was, you know, sort of conceptual white paper content. The department was willing to accept that. And then, of course, they put their own white paper and products out there and kind of floated the ideas and kind of worked on iterating this set of regulations before they actually released public drafts. And we felt comfortable all along that we were being heard and understood. There are always obviously some tensions about ways in which to approach things, some technical issues. We appreciate the substantive way in which they took the last set of revisions and incorporated many of our suggestions and comments. specifically about clarifying some of the basins and the process and noticing requirements that are much more clear and strong, stronger emphasis on the local decision-making that will need to occur in these basins and empowering folks at these in these local agencies to make the decisions they need to do, emphasizing the CEQA compliance, the fact that that's their local responsibility, and then this idea of the bar for fragmentation, the concern about fragmentation, and we know, of course, initially that the idea was 100%, and that's just really an impossible bar to get over, and we I think we made a good case that there's some concern about some possible leveraging that might have occurred. And so the idea of a 75% boundary for those local agencies, I think, is a reasonably high bar, but not impossible to cover. And we think that the process is going to result in much more certainty about the process of formation of these GSAs. And that's, of course, a crucial issue right now. A lot of these agencies are getting together and talking at a basin scale about how they're going to form these GSAs and how they're going to be governed. And the idea of what the boundaries are going to be is fundamental. So I think this regulation provides that clarity. We appreciate the department moving it so quickly and staying on time. We were very concerned about that at the beginning. And now here we are at the commission level in October, and we still have a little time before the December deadline. So all in all, we're very pleased, and we recommend that the California Water Commission adopt the regulations as proposed. We also support the outreach efforts that the department is doing with the clearinghouse and the idea of technical assistance and AquaStands Ready and helping to get that out there to the local water agencies and provide venues and information for them to access those tools and to better understand how this regulation can be used to complement their ongoing CEQA planning process. So with that, I concluding my remarks and happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you.
Any no questions? Okay, next up I've got Tom Peltier from the State Water Board, who has the enforcement laboring ore, which I'm sure will be more controversial.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Tom Peltier with the State Water Board. I'm a geologist in the groundwater management unit there. Board staff provided some technical input to the Department of Water Resources on development of the draft regulations, and we think the draft regulations as they are now are appropriate and consistent with CEQA, and we urge you to adopt the regulations as they are. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Tom. Next up, I've got Jennifer Clary with the Clean Water Action. Welcome, Jennifer. Take your time. Kyle on deck. All right.
Sorry, Jennifer Clary, Clean Water Action. Sorry, running a little late getting out of the city this morning. So I want to thank staff. As you know, at the last commission meeting, we had a lot of concerns about the document and the lack of stakeholder engagement. And it's not perfect, but we feel staff has done a really good job of trying to balance everyone's concerns and interests. And we do understand that the basin boundary portion of the act does not incorporate all the stakeholder requirements of CEQA. So we knew that we were operating kind of in a different area. And we really appreciate staff taking the time to meet with us and review the changes with us so that we could understand them and communicate that to the people on our listserv, the 45 or so groups that we try to keep in touch with. So just thank you very much, and we look forward to having a similar dialogue around the regulations, which are going to be much harder. And thank you, Commissioner Herrera. We'll forward the comments that we already provided to the commission, to the staff on that.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. Kyle Jones with Sierra Club. Welcome, Kyle.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. Kyle Jones with Sierra Club, California. Just wanted to echo a lot of what Jennifer just said. Worked with her and staff throughout this process, and it's been a great process, and we look forward to continuing to work with them going forward, and we urge your support in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. All right, last chance for public comment. Any more? Yes. Yeah, please come right forward and just give your name.
Sorry, I thought I filled out a form. John Woodling, Executive Director of Sacramento Groundwater Authority, and I had the pleasure to also serve on DWR's practitioner advisory panel. This may be a historic event when I come up and say about the same thing that Jennifer Clary said. That doesn't usually happen. So DWR called this their Summer of Outreach on SGMA, and it sort of turned into the Summer of Love, I say, because there's really been nothing but positive comments on the process, the interactiveness, the collaboration between the state and locals, local agencies, local stakeholders. So I do urge the commission to adopt the regulations today. Further, I request the commission to really reinforce the process and keep it going for the next set of regs. It's worked. The upfront work led to an initial draft of the regs that was in pretty good shape and a good discussion piece for all kinds of stakeholders to get to where we are today. And the second piece, and Dave Gutierrez mentioned this, there's a lot of uncertainty ahead. So again, I think if the commission can oversee this and make sure that the regs are serving the intended purpose over time, and then give DWR the support to amend those and modify those in the future if they need to work better. And then finally, I think the draft regs on basin boundaries, and I hope the future regs, I think for local agencies that are really on the front lines of implementing SGMA, I think this provides the right level of flexibility that we need to carry out that job. So thank you to the staff, and thank you to the commission.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Orth.
Well, I just wanted to thank all of the public, and I know everybody's very busy, so it was important to me to see kind of the cross-section of public comment and the commitment that you all made to be here and be supportive of this. I was very pleased, and I think you've heard this earlier, about the letter that we saw from multiple parties that it was evidenced that the concerns expressed last month by Jennifer and other on behalf of others were appropriately addressed. Again, I think you've set a pretty high bar for yourself, guys, because I think you did an exceptional job here, and now we have to get into the tough stuff. If it's appropriate, I guess I'd like to move that the commission adopt Resolution 215-03, which adopts the emergency regulations for basin boundary modifications under the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act.
I just want to add, and one thing which I wanted to mention before, if we could add on to the motion or if at your pleasure, is that apparently in the OL process there's some back and forth on technical changes. So if you could add on to your motion that there'd be some authority given to our executive director to approve non-substantive typo type stuff, which apparently is fairly common.
Yes, so. I'd be willing to modify my motion to grant that authority at the pleasure of the commission. I think that is appropriate.
Okay. I second that motion. Motion and a second from Commissioner Herrera. I think we'll call the roll.
Commissioner Ball.
Yes.
Commissioner Byrne.
Yes.
Commissioner Dalboske.
Yes.
Commissioner Daniels.
Yes.
Commissioner Herrera.
Yes.
Commissioner Orth.
Yes.
Commissioner Quintero.
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes. The regs are approved. Thank you again. Boy, it's really such positivity in the room. It's going to be hard to match this, but great job again, and look forward to interacting on the regulations on the plan. If only our Chapter 8 regulations could be this easy.
They will.
Not easy, but smooth at the end, at least. Okay, so thanks again, everybody. Okay, we're going to move on to item number 8, speaking of Chapter 8, on the agenda, which is an update on program and administrative activities of our WSIP program, the Water Storage Investment Program. And the master of ceremonies on those events is Jenny Marr. Welcome, Jenny.
Hope it's just the lighting, but I feel green with envy over the basin boundary regulations. So hopefully the positive vibes don't leave the room. So I'm going to give a quick update on the program and administrative activities. Thank you, Rachel. And I know we've got a lot more time today than we planned, so I'll take it a little slow, and I may look to the commission every so often for questions or comments instead of waiting till the end. One of our major administrative updates of the last month is we had a request for qualifications for a technical team. Our current technical team's contract is expiring at the end of November, so we solicited qualifications from appropriate firms in September, and we've spent the last couple weeks interviewing qualified applicants, and we're hoping to have someone under contract, a new technical consultant team, by the first week of December. It really depends on the negotiation process, how quickly we can get someone on board, but we're trying to be efficient as possible and get someone on as soon as possible. The next administrative update, besides the new contract, is a proposal to initiate the rulemaking process in December. Originally, we had planned to come to the commission in the October meeting, this meeting, with a draft of the regulations and a draft of the entire rulemaking package. But just due to the transition of the technical team and new counsel on board to allow for some new time, just the awkward timing of things, we feel we can push back the schedule a month and not have any major ramifications. We kind of had that December meeting as a float, and we're going to need to have that meeting to have you approve the draft regulations and the rulemaking package to start the OAL process. And originally we thought, sorry for your Christmas break, that we might be able to cancel that meeting, but we will need it to now approve the draft regulations and the rulemaking package.
Yeah, I'm going to quickly just add something on that. I mean, we have a new counsel as well, Holly, and I want to give her a chance to look at them. And I think going into the OAL process, I think there's a little fine-tuning that is being done and looked at. I know Holly will look at to make sure that it's in a form and format that is least likely to have comments and slow the process at a later time. So that's partly a reason as well. And when I talk to staff, it sounds like it doesn't necessarily limit our ability to finish in the timeline in which we wanted to finish the entire thing. So it's a little fine-tuning, bringing Holly up to speed, the technical consultants, still sticking to the same overall timeline of being done, I can't remember when, but towards the middle or end of next year.
December 15th, 2016. Yeah, we certainly want to utilize...
Or a month before that, Jenny, right?
Of course. Right, okay, yes, right. We have up to December 15th, 2016. Yeah, we want to definitely utilize Holly's experience in the rulemaking process and get her really, you know, get her hands into the package, the draft package that we've developed. So getting into kind of the work that the technical team's been doing, it's really been business as usual. We've had draft regulations out for a couple months now, and we've been sharing updated drafts with the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. The one thing that we wanted to do for October is to kind of put a little pause on how many drafts we were releasing. I think we were exhausting our stakeholders by having a new draft of the regulations every 2 weeks, one for the Stakeholder Advisory Committee and then an update at one for the commission. So in October, the staff draft that was shared with the Stakeholder Advisory Committee is the draft that we're going out and doing our public meetings. It's the same draft that you're looking at. We're definitely seeing a slowdown in comments, so I think we're starting to hit the mark in a lot of areas. So we've been compiling comments we've received in October, and I'll kind of step through the comment letters that we received in a few slides. We're continuing to draft the informative digest and initial statement of reasons. Those are items in the regulations package that we were working closely with Holly with to get those in draft final form for your review at the next meeting. And we're continuing to draft the application package guidance document, and that's kind of our joint PSP guidelines document that will provide the details for applicants completing their applications.
Jenny, I'm sorry, I'm asking that question. So that would be the last piece then to have a whole universe of documents the regs and the digest and
that'll we'll have the rulemaking package and this application guidance document, and a big part of that document is not only the details on the form to fill out, how to fill out that form, what information to provide, but we're also working on a technical appendix to that, and that'll have the real meat and technical assistance for applicants to use and satisfying what's in the regulations.
The so, quantification piece.
Yeah, a big part of that is, you know, the quantification and management of the public benefits and some data sets to use, some potential models, some reference points, some reference materials, examples. So we're trying to not develop a how-to guide, but at least provide a starting point for applicants to develop their applications.
So quick timeline. So we're going to hopefully in December send over the regs to OAL.
Yep.
And then when would that last technical piece be?
We're imagining...
Obviously, it's a draft form, and
yes.
It's nice to have them all collectively together so you can see how they all work together.
We imagine having a preliminary draft out in January so that at least when stakeholders and project proponents are reviewing the regulations in the formal rulemaking process, they've got an idea of what the technical guidance and the application instructions will contain. It won't contain everything because the final application instructions would say when the workshops are and the due dates for all the materials. So those might be blank since we've still got some time to, and we don't know how long the rulemaking process is going to take. So putting actual hard dates on application deadlines and workshops we won't be able to do in January, but it'll at least be a 60-70% draft of everything so they can see what type of information is going to be provided and can make sure between the regulations, the application instructions, the form, and the technical guidance that they have the information that they need to develop the applications.
Got it. And one last one. Sorry.
No, we've got time.
No, I'm not wanting to just take time for that purpose. But in thinking of it, so on the timeline again, then, so we go into the informal, and then at what point, and maybe this is, I see Spencer talking to Holly, but maybe it's a Spencer question too. At what point does the informal, and I'm sorry, this is always confusing to me, at what point does it go into the formal where, you know, do we make a decision at some point that we're comfortable and then we submit it formal, or how does that OAL process work again? So like, I'm trying to think of when we might be able to be done. And let's say we have everyone's, probably not, but thinks everything's great.
So my understanding of the rulemaking process, and I don't want to put Holly and Spencer on the spot to correct me if I'm wrong, but if we adopt the draft in December...
Okay, can I just jump in here?
Not adopt, but approve the draft.
Well, and some of this is me just jumping in after being on the job for a couple of days. One of the important distinctions we need to make is that you're not going to approve the draft in December. You're going to allow us to move forward with the draft for potential adoption through the APA.
So we're sending it to them.
You're allowing the Water Commission to move forward, to file it with OAL, to start the formal process. And the reason that distinction is important is because we don't want to be seen as pre-approving something and then basically not considering public comment.
Right.
So what you'll be doing in December is approving and directing CWC to move forward with the rulemaking process. When that regulation, when the notice package and it's, you know, the notice, the initial statement of reasons, the draft regulations, the informative digest, those documents, when those are filed with the Office of Administrative Law in December, that starts off a 45-day formal comment period. And during that 45-day comment period, we'll be receiving formal comments that we will need to answer throughout the rulemaking process. We only have a year statutorily from the time we publish the notice to the time we refile it. We file everything that's finished with OAL. So no matter how we do it, if we file the notice in December, we have to be done by December. So that's kind of where the timing is.
And if you, so you send, you have a 45-day comment period, you go back to comment if you have changes to it? Is that how it works?
If there are substantive changes, and substantive is, you know, basically anything more than a typo, grammar, base. There's a statute that covers what is substantive and what's not. But if you have substantive changes, you need to go out, republish with a 15-day comment period. Formal comments come in. You have to answer all of those.
So it's 45 and subsequently 15, 15, 15. Okay.
Hopefully not that many, but yes.
Well, you don't know. Yeah. We had a, we did agricultural water measurement regulations, and we were mired in going back and forth for quite a long time. So.
Right. So the and part of why I'm the I'm saying hopefully not that many is because every time you do a 15-day, it you're also running up against the one-year deadline. Yeah. And we need to get everything back to you guys to approve within that 1 year. Otherwise, we have to start all over. There are no extensions.
And after we approve it, I remember with the ag measurement regulations, does it go back to OAL again?
It does go back to OAL again. They have 30 working days to evaluate and approve it. So if we, if the Water Commission decides to approve for adoption in a year and some from now, in December of 2016, we basically finalize the file. We send it over to OAL. Because it's December, there are a number of holidays that show up really quickly. So you're and my usual calculation is 30 working days is about 45 actual days. So that's when you're looking at getting it out of OAL.
Okay. So hopefully you've talked to them and they've sent us all the comments, and whatever we approve is something that we've already gotten a semi-green light that they're going to be okay with.
There is no pre-approval with OAL.
Right. It's been so obvious to us from before. Yeah.
Yes. This is. I think, I'm not speaking out of turn, this is part of why everyone really likes the fact that I'm here, is that I've worked there before and I know how this process works.
All right. Well, we like that. That sounds okay. Great, Holly. Yeah. Okay, Jenny, I'm sorry. Any other comments or?
Holly? And I did want to point out a typo before I get a lot of comment letters in the mail. Proposal to start rulemaking process in December 2015. So 2 months from now, not a year and 2 months from now. So please correct in your notes the December 2015. So for the engineering and economics work group, I've already touched on the technical guidance appendix. We're working on that, hoping to have a draft out in January, so it's out on the streets for people to look at while they're reviewing the regulations package. One of the things that we're hoping to do next month is bring together a small group of technical advisors, potential project proponents, and folks that'll be actually putting applications together to do an early review of the technical guidance appendix. So we're hoping to do a little outreach on the technical guidance appendix before it rolls out for public review draft. We've continued working on potential unit values of water. That's work that's ongoing, and those will be provided in the technical guidance appendix. So that work will be wrapping up soon. We're also conducting a literature search for examples of monetizing ecosystem benefits. We know this is a area of concern for a lot of project proponents, and our economists are currently working through various examples that are out there that have projects, successful projects that have gone through various processes, and these are not all California examples, but they're conducting a literature search for any examples that they can find to provide some guidance and tangible examples to project proponents on monetizing ecosystem benefits. And we've really started in earnest developing evaluation criteria and metrics, and we hope to start rolling out some information for the commission to weigh in on in the next couple meetings. So our ecosystem and water quality work group, including our agency team with State Water Board, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Delta Stewardship Council, this is the work that primarily has focused on to date the priorities and relative environmental value that are in the regulations. Currently, we're compiling comments that we've received on the priorities and relative environmental values. Those have been relatively minor to this point. We've worked very closely on updating the management and monitoring section of the regulations. There's been a lot of input from Department of Fish and Wildlife and the State Water Board on that section because a lot of that falls to the contracts that project proponents or applicants will be entering into with those agencies to manage and monitor the public benefits in over the project useful life. And further, we've been discussing, you know, the statute requires these public agencies to enter under contract, and we've been discussing what needs to be in these contracts. What should they include? We know that they're going to be a vehicle for adaptive management of the public benefits, but we're really starting to think about, you know, what needs to be in these, who are the authorized people to enter into these agreements, and having some conversations with DWR, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the State Water Board specifically on these contracts. That's it for administrative update and program updates, unless there's any more questions.
Are there any questions, commissioners?
I have a thought, and I'm not sure if it fits neatly into this category or not, because I see you're dividing our discussion up into administrative and program updates and then stakeholder process, and then later on we're actually going to talk about the regulations. But let me just throw this out. One of the things that I think would be really helpful, and you've showed it to us in the past in different forms, is a flow chart, a decision-making flow chart. Mm-hmm. I think as long as you're standing in the glow of the Sigma right now, one of the things that was helpful is the depiction of process and the graphic depiction of the process that helped bring transparency to something that otherwise might be confusing. Yep. So there's... And again, this what I'm about to say might not fit into this category, but I'll mention it now. One of the things that I did raise last time that I wanted to see reflected in the minutes was a question of what our process, once we start the decision-making process and rank projects, are we going to be able to have another round? And if we get to that other round, how do we do it? Like, if we rank and then set aside, say we're going to be able to fund this much, but maybe we have another round of funding because we, you know, only decided we can work with this many projects, or are we going to create another official round or something else? And I know I'm now wading into substantive issues relative to the draft regulations, but being able to depict that process is something along the lines of this work that you're doing, although I know you're laying out here substantive work. But I think it would be helpful to us to see that, because there is that still that looming question of whether or not we should have several rounds of funding because of projects that might not be ready yet or getting up to speed. So, again, I wasn't sure where to insert that comment, so I'm just doing it now.
No, that's a great comment and question. And for the flowchart, we've definitely focused to this point on a flowchart from the applicant's perspective, but one of the things that we're currently working on is an information map from the commission's perspective that outlines all of the findings and decisions that the commission needs to make and where the information will come from, kind of getting all the way through what the technical team's going to look at, how they're going to summarize it and develop dashboards and other materials, the decision support tool for the commission, and where the commission will go into these tools to grab the information that they might need, that you all might need to make the decision. So we're working on kind of a decision map right now that we're hoping to have a draft form so you can see it in November. So,
okay. I was going to recommend that we do that soon because it will help make sure we understand the context of the regulations and how they're going to work, because the regulations are, by definition, they're going to have a certain type of language and structure, but to interpret them would be helpful to us.
Yep. Yeah.
So by November at the latest would be great.
And to the question on multiple solicitations.
Yes.
That is something that has come up at meetings before, and you know, where we've landed on that is staff had recommended at this point in time one solicitation. So we've got a competitive public process for one solicitation because after we did the scoping survey, the $2.7 billion seemed like a lot of money, but when $40 billion in projects came through, it seemed like we would have sufficient eligible projects and needs to exhaust the 2.7 in one solicitation. There was talk of if there was money returned to the commission or if there weren't eligible projects, that there would be an opportunity to do a second solicitation depending on that pot of money. One of the things that was discussed is we do the one solicitation, and assuming all of the funds are quote-unquote committed, there's a lot of work that has to happen after the initial funding decision to a final funding decision. Project proponents would have to get permits, all of their approvals, final designs, and there is the potential that a project that gets a conditional funding commitment wouldn't make it to the end line, and that money would come back to the commission. And in previous discussions, and I think this was springtime, so a long time ago at this point, there was talk of let's do the one solicitation now and focus on doing one, but if money does come back to the commission or they're not able to commit all the funds with the projects that are provided at this point, there could be several options. Doing a second solicitation, funding the next project down on the list, if projects didn't get their 50%, upping everyone that did make it through to their 50% cap. So I think there's a couple options there, and it seemed like in the spring there was a little discomfort with making the decision about what to do then, but just kind of moving forward with the one solicitation. But I think that's a question that's still on the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just to elaborate, I think we did talk about that, and it's a good point in general on a lot of these issues, which I think we did kind of agree to have one, but I do think it makes me think going forward that, you know, we've been making all these decisions in a very collegial way and somewhat informal, knowing that it's going to be in the regs and that there's opportunities for us to look at things. So maybe going forward, it makes sense for all of us to individually look at what the regs are, and then we can, in addition to what staff is doing, identify issues that maybe we're kind of resolved but still up in the air, and because we may need to have more formal resolution of things where we vote on things and there's a record, and because there's not going to be consensus and everything. So I think on something like that, I think every decision we've made so far has been kind of a preliminary decision. So I would encourage all of us to look at what those things are that are in there that we may have problems with or want to revisit in a more formal way. So I think there's going to be a lot, I think, on that.
Well, let me flag that one now, because that does, as we've been going along, that does give me pause, and I'm wondering about formalizing that process a little bit more. I do also have, and I'm saving it for the afternoon discussion because it seems to be that's where it's properly agendized, but I have quite a few comments on the draft regulations and very specific changes I'd like to propose or made. So to me, that would be a more formal discussion that I'm anticipating will take place this afternoon. As for the rounds of solicitation, that I think we'll have to discuss a little bit more, but I hope we can.
Yeah, I think I think maybe that's something that we can agendize along with a number of other things, and we should think through a timeline for that, because it might be that we should give ourselves a certain amount of time to maybe try to do it in a more organized fashion than just kind of over the course of the next 6 months, because it'd be nice to kind of be done with what we think are major issues, and obviously things are going to come up after that.
Think we need to provide clarity to the public for comment as well, so
And telegraph to them that we're going to be talking about those issues so that they can attend.
And which direction we might be going.
Right. Commissioner Herr.
Just to add, I think another issue that we need to also consider is, over the last month or so, we've heard a lot of public comments on whether we should be setting aside certain funds for, you know, different types of projects. There's been discussion of, you know, these larger scale projects versus the smaller ones, and I think that's another, you know, item that we need to discuss more formally as a commission and you know, give some sort of direction to staff on that. And then the other item, and just so that I don't forget, is at the last commission meeting, I believe Commissioner DeBosque also brought up the potential idea of looking into creating some sort of technical assistance program for some of the, you know, smaller project proponents. And I think those are all, you know, items that need to be discussed and considered further by the commission with public input. So I'd like to add those two.
Okie doke.
Sorry, I'm jumping in again. One note of caution as you're talking about, you know, adding solicitation periods and adding more public comment and all of that is that there's a different timeline in play if we're moving forward in December with the regulations. And certainly a lot of what I'm hearing, and granted this is still day three of my job, so I'm not up to speed.
I'm only allowed to say that three or four times.
Okay. Okay. I've used two. But a lot of what I'm hearing sounds like things that ought to be in the regulation, frankly. And so just as a word of caution, if we're talking about getting these regulations in place over the next year and going out in December, there is a sense of a little bit of a sense of urgency in terms of direction to the Water Commission staff as well.
Sure.
Meaning, you know, if you'd like us to put in a second round of solicitation and direct, you know, the order of things or those sorts of things, we need those directions, frankly, sooner rather than later.
So we should do it preferably before putting anything into OAL.
That would be
not to
helpful.
Say that obviously there's going to be ongoing discussions throughout
there,
the
there
year.
There are going to be certainly ongoing discussions, and there is an opportunity, of course, to you know, amend and change regulations as they're in process. That's the 15-day process. But there are limits in terms of notice procedures and those sorts of things. We're in a good place because these are going to be brand new regulations, so that's helpful. But there's still a, you know, if you're going to add wholesale a second solicitation period or wholesale new topics, we could run into some potential issues by adding those in later because they might be considered outside the scope of the notice.
Got it. Commissioner Daniels?
Yeah, for what it's worth, I was thinking we could, we have discussed it in the context of discussions, agendized discussions of the draft regulations, and we've had some conversation about it. We didn't formalize anything. My thought was we could discuss it again this afternoon. We had a discussion the last meeting. We could discuss it this afternoon. To the extent we agendize it, I would think we could officially agendize it for November.
Well, I think it's sufficiently described now for us to have a discussion this afternoon, and if we want to get into some of these, I have no objection to that at all, unless anyone else does. Knock them out.
I guess my preference would be to, you know, hopefully put them on the agenda because we may miss comments from other people that may not be here today. And I would, and I think we can start the discussion today. But, you know, in order for me to feel comfortable taking action, I would want to have it on the agenda.
So we can start it today and then maybe shape it for a later discussion.
Okay, yeah, and that is something to think about when we do the agenda itself as well. So we can say our general description, and then we can have a list of things that we're going to... Okay, that's a great point. Okay, Jenny.
I'm going to just second Holly's concerns, and we'll put this on the November agenda because it is an item that would need to be reflected in the regulations. So some of the changes that we're talking about, a second solicitation or breaking up the funds in various pots, those are definitely things that we'd want to reflect in the regulation before we start the process. So we'll get that on the November agenda.
And maybe, well, we can also maybe have a little bit of a discussion about it today if you like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And we can update the regulations to reflect the discussion today and have that as the updated proposal for the November meeting. Okay. Are we ready to move on?
Yeah. Item number, unless there's any public comment on item number 8. Kyle.
Kyle Jones of Sierra Club, California, and I just wanted to say on administrative activities, it would be very helpful if when releases of draft regulations come out that we have a tracked changes version. The differences between, I was just kind of, from what I've seen on the October 19th version, I am struggling to find quickly the differences between the October 6th version. It would just be a really helpful if that could be released. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle. Just to let everyone know, the track changes version is on the commission's website for this meeting. We just didn't print it, but it is available online. So communication and engagement update.
Another public comment? Oh, this time coming up. Okay, great.
So just as a brief overview, we conducted our October Stakeholder Advisory Committee meeting on the 7th. There's a brief summary of that meeting in your packet. We did a thorough walkthrough for a second time with the stakeholders through the draft agenda. So most of the summary is bullet items just based on reflecting folks' comments. We also conducted public meetings in Lafayette and Clovis, and I'll provide a little bit more detail on those in a couple slides. So the October Stakeholder Advisory Committee meeting, we spent the morning talking about the priorities and relative environmental value. So the State Board, State Water Board, and Department of Fish and Wildlife will be here this afternoon to walk through the updated priorities and relative environmental value. These have been revised since the version I think you last heard about at the May or June meeting. And so at this point in time, there are drafts of both priorities and relative environmental values from both agencies. This is the first time that you'll see the water quality relative environmental values. So you'll be able to ask questions of Gail from the State Water Board on those.
A minute, since we have time.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask a question that I was going to ask about those. I saw them and understood them, and I'm sure we'll have a discussion with them if need be about it this afternoon. But what is what I saw in the regulations is that they were simply placed there without comment. So my question to you is going to be, does that mean that we're adopting those priorities? Right? I mean, in terms of the regulation itself, the language doesn't state that. It just simply inserts them. So my sense is that we're then saying, and these are therefore our priorities as well. And then how does that translate into ranking the projects? Are we assigning points to those priorities and so forth?
I think we can be a little bit clearer in the regulations that in statute, the priorities came from Department of Fish and Wildlife for Ecosystem and the State Water Board for water quality, and they are the priorities of those agencies. So I don't think there needs to be a resolution that the commission adopts them as their priorities, but
right.
They are part of the regulations and would go through the rulemaking process under the commission's direction.
But how does that translate into ranking
the
projects?
So the way I've been explaining the priorities and relative environmental value is that the priorities can be used by project proponents as potential objectives in their plan formulation. So when they're going through their plan formulation process and identifying the problem needs and opportunities that their project can address and identifying their project objectives, they can use the priorities, and there's no expectation that any project is going to achieve all the priorities or even, you know, one ecosystem or one water quality. It's to the best of the project's ability, based on their own formulation, that they can use these priorities to help formulate their project and help achieve the objectives within Chapter 8. And so the priorities themselves are more of a tool for the project proponents to use, whereas the relative environmental value is something that the review team, which will include Department of Fish and Wildlife and State Water Board, will be developing a score or evaluation criteria for relative environmental value. So it'll be one of the criteria that the commission will have to say this group of projects relative to this group of project has a higher relative environmental value for ecosystem or for water quality or for both. And so the relative environmental values within the regulations text reflect the various factors that the review team will be looking at to determine a evaluation score for relative environmental value.
So in terms of a commission decision, it sounds like, I'm going to try to repeat this back to make sure I understood it. So the state water resources control board priorities, the fish and wildlife priorities are something that the technical reviewers will take into account in order to assign an environmental value.
Yes.
That may or may not be a numeric value.
We're looking at various options. Right now, we're thinking it's going to be a high, medium, low type of evaluation that we'll look at all the projects relative to each other based on the factors. I think there's 11 for Fish and Wildlife and 13 for the State Water Board for relative environmental value, and assign a, this has a high relative environmental value, a medium relative environmental value, or a low relative environmental value compared to the other projects that have been submitted.
Then are we, is there a way for, will it be a tool for the commission to use?
Yes.
Those state water resources, but as, so there's a technical review, high, medium, low environmental value, but as we make our decisions, can we separately use the state water resource control board priorities and the fish and wildlife priorities, and if so, how would we use them?
So one of the
assigning
things,
numbers.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're working through right now before we bring a proposal to the commission is what the evaluation criteria are and what the metrics are. And without, you know, spoiling the surprise, we're
we don't need surprises. It's okay.
we're looking at what we've been calling bins, scoring bins, and this is trying to divvy up the technical review into different categories of what the technical reviewers will be looking at. And I'm going to rely on my memory a little bit, but some of the bins are the public benefits, and how are they evaluated on public benefits? How are they evaluated on project feasibility? How are they evaluated on measurable improvements to the delta or delta TRIBs? How are they evaluated on economics? And so where the relative environmental value would come into play is we've got a bin one for public benefits, and under that is a category, a subcategory for each of the public benefit types. And so relative environmental value would go into the scoring of ecosystem improvement benefits and into the scoring of the water quality improvement benefits. And that's from a technical review perspective. But when we were just starting to draft and discuss what potential dashboards in a skeleton of the decision support tool for the commission would be, and you know, one of those dashboards, because relative environmental value is so important, it would be a criteria in the dashboard that you would see on its own. And so this is all very preliminary, and one of the things that staff you know, is just initiating now, because it's good work for us to hold on to while the regulations are being developed. So we focused on the regulations first, and while we're very close to initiating that process, now we're starting to do the work on how is the technical team going to put this into practice, what things do we need to have for the evaluation criteria? What could the tool look like? So I think hopefully things will become clearer over the next couple months when we're rolling out some drafts of the evaluation criteria and what these tools might look like.
Okay. To me, it's helpful because it informs what I think the language of the regulations could or should be. So it'd be helpful to know those types of decision-making tools sooner rather than later. Thank you.
And Jenny, so just not to belabor the point, but so it sounds like it's going to be something that is going to be noted, and whether it's, you know, hitting one of the priorities or not. So if you had two benefits that scored exactly the same based upon whatever they might be doing, if one is addressing a priority, then there will be essentially an indication that it is doing that where the other is not. And then that would be something that staff would potentially weight, all their things being equal, and we would look at as well and be able to say, oh, that hits one of the priorities, so that therefore might give it an additional push.
Yes, so without stealing Scott and Gail's thunder. But when they go through the relative environmental values, they're very close together for the ecosystem in water quality side. They're almost parallel. There's just a couple differences. And the first priority or the first factor for determining relative environmental value for both is how many priorities does this project help support? And then the remaining factors are things like duration of that benefit, immediacy of achieving that benefit, magnitude of that benefit, and so on. So the relative environmental value is a good reflection of how well a project achieves the priorities and the duration and quality, I guess, of that achievement.
Okay, that's helpful.
And we'll step into that in a lot more detail when Scott and Gail are here.
Okay, great.
Okay, so getting back to the Stakeholder Advisory Committee meeting, I think a couple key themes kind of arose from that particular meeting. And at least from a staff perspective, what we heard is there was a lot of concern about ensuring that public benefits are resilient in the future, that we consider changing conditions, whether they be climate or species or ecosystem conditions, while we are managing and monitoring the public benefits. So a big theme was adaptive management and making sure that that shows up clearly in the regulations. And so that's something that staff is still working on to make sure that those concerns are adequately addressed. We do note that that is something that will be a consideration in our evaluation criteria, is not only the magnitude of public benefit, but how those benefits potentially change in the future and if they're resilient to climate change or other factors that might, other projects that might come in line or other major activities that may affect the project. So there is requirement for some evaluation of that within the current regulation, but we will work to address some of the concerns that we heard.
And Jenny, I was just going to say, maybe that's something to flag just for the afternoon. Some broader comments on it.
Very good. And then a second theme, really focusing on the management and monitoring of public benefits, was the enforcement of ensuring that those benefits are provided as claimed. And I think there's some language that we can add to that section to address some of these concerns, talking about the consequences of projects not providing the benefits that they claimed, more information about the contracts that are required, alluding to project permits will include requirements on the projects and have their own enforcement attached to them. And, you know, one of the questions was, what kind of enforcement authority does the commission have? And that's something we'll need to look in, because the only thing that popped into a lot of our minds from managing grants in the past was rescinding funds. Since this is a funding agreement that the commission's entering into, if a potential consequence of not getting the public benefits that were claimed is asking for funds back in the process in which that requires. So I think we can add some language, but a couple comments. I'm not sure we can address. One of the comments was to include third-party enforcement into that management monitoring section, but the statute that we have does not have authority to allow the commission to include that into the regulations, so we won't be able to put that in. And we are also unsure at this point to what level we can talk about the contracts, because it gets into, you know, the regulations stipulating what another agency must put in their contracts, their legal contracts. So we don't know how much language we can, if any, we can put in the regulation to that extent on the contracts, but we can at least forecast that the contracts are required and at what point in time in the process that they need to be entered into before getting a final commitment. So these are comments that we're currently working on to get into the next version of the regulations. The comment letters that we've received, your packet should include all of these. We received several comment letters from members of the SAC and from members of the public. There's also a new addition from this morning from the Delta Stewardship Council. They provided a comment letter that's included in your packet. And we've also received some informal comments that we did not include. They were just emails from and meetings with the California Natural Resources Agency that we're working with them closely to address their comments. And we've also received, the slide says 50-plus, but I think at this point it's 100-plus, emails from members of the public with concerns on addressing climate change and funding surface storage projects. So we're getting a lot of communication and email at this point in time, getting kind of into the project side and what types of projects the commission should fund and the regulation side and how climate change analysis should be included in the regulation. The good news on receiving all these comment letters is the volume is actually getting less. This seems like a lot, but most of these comment letters are just a page or two, and the comments are getting relatively minor. A lot of it is just changing some definitions, a word here, a word there. There's a couple concerns that are out there that I think we can discuss in the afternoon session, but I think we're really close to reaching resolution on all of these concerns and getting a draft, an updated draft in November that the commission can feel comfortable acting on. So before I move on to the public meeting, any questions on the stakeholder advisory committee process? Oh, I should note that was our last meeting. October 7th reflected the last meeting of the stakeholder advisory committee. We convened them to help us draft the initial version, the administrative draft of the public benefits during the informal rulemaking process. And now that we're about to embark on the formal rulemaking process, we've thanked, of course, the stakeholder advisory committee for their service, for their input, but that was the last meeting of the group. Okay. We had two public meetings. Our third and final public meeting in this series is tonight across the street. Last Monday, we were in Lafayette. We had about 25 attendees, and the attendees mostly asked questions about clarification of definitions of process, and we've heard from some of the participants there about appreciating the flexibility that's within the current regulations for scalability on project size and project type and keeping that flexibility and even getting a little bit more specific about modifying the regulations to provide a little bit more flexibility on the climate change data. You'll see in the when we go through stepwise the regulations this afternoon, we provide it data and maps and potential climate change scenarios for various hydrologic regions within the regulation. And one of the comments in that meeting was to, and in a comment letter, was to take that out, put that in the technical appendix, and just provide kind of that flexibility for climate change analysis that allows applicants to adapt to new information. In Clovis, we had that meeting was a week ago, last Wednesday. We had about 100 attendees, and attendees expressed concern over the schedule and how the schedule was developed and that the schedule was too long and needs were immediate. Desire for ag water to be a public benefit, that was something that we also heard from a participant in Lafayette. Frustration over the focus of ecosystem and wanting to kind of change the definition of some of the public benefits. And, of course, support for the Temperance Flat project. So any questions, comments on the public meetings?
There was, there was also comment in Clovis about the timing of the solicitation period and some of the projects needing more time than others, and maybe being put at a disadvantage. There was a concern about us funding projects out and not allowing time for some of the projects that took a little bit more time to be put together.
Okay. Some of the activities we have coming up is, of course, our public meeting tonight. The November 18th commission meeting, where we'll review the regulation package and updated version of the draft regulations. The December 16th commission meeting to hopefully allow staff to move forward with the rulemaking process and the formal OAL process. The 45-day public comment period will initiate with OAL receiving our proposed rulemaking process and posting it in their register. We'll have public hearing on the regulations. We had talked previously that's generally done by request, but staff felt that we'll be proactive and have one public hearing on the regulations during the 45-day public comment period. We'll also be doing public meeting series on the draft application instructions, so we anticipate those being ready in January. So in early 2016, we'll be doing another public meeting series on the draft application instructions and the technical appendix. And then later in 2016, we'll be initiating our technical workshops on the application process.
Okay. Any commissioner comments or questions? If not, I will go to public for item number 9.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Adam Folukevich-Robin. I'm with the Association of California Water Agencies. I do want to say just briefly note that at the last stakeholder advisory committee meeting, we were advised that comment letters would be accepted up until this Friday, so we are planning on submitting detailed comments in response to the draft regulations, as well as a red line strikeout version that we hope might be helpful for the commission as you consider potential changes to the regulations. But I really wanted to just take this opportunity to really express from one stakeholder groups our appreciation and recognition for the amount of effort and work that went into both the Stakeholder Advisory Committee and all of the public meetings that the Commission has had to date. I think that there's real value in what the Commission has done so far, and I just want to recognize the fact that it's above and beyond the requirements of Proposition 1. There are public meetings that are required under Proposition 1. There are various meetings that you all have to have, but everything that you've done to date really goes above and beyond those requirements, and we think there's real value in that. As you hear from staff on some of the feedback that they're getting at these public meetings, a lot of it is just explaining the process to people, because it is a process. You're embarking on this multi-year effort to consider what improvements you're going to be making to the state's water system, and just explaining that process, I think, is very helpful for members of the public. In the same vein, I think that the op-eds that commissioners have recently submitted to papers around the state and that they've done, I think, for over a year now have been kind of helpful as well. So just really want to thank you, commissioners, for taking your commitment to transparency so seriously, and thank staff for all of the work that's gone into coordinating and planning these various stakeholder advisory committee meetings, because I think they've been very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adam. Thanks for keeping the positivity going, too. It's nice. Appreciate it. Any other comments? Great. Okay, so we're at the lunch break, and we have 25 minutes. Are there some things we can do? Jenny, I know that the state board folks aren't here, and that can be maybe not as substantive as some of the issues that maybe Paula and Maria and I were talking about.
I think walking through the regulations would best be done around the conference table. I don't know if there's small items to check off without kind of stepping through. So I think we would deep dive really quickly.
Yeah. Okay. So are there other, so the rest of the agenda then for the day is doing that and then also hearing from the
Scott
board.
Now.
Yeah, right. And from the Fish and Wildlife. Yeah, what is the pleasure of the commission then? We can take a lunch break and we can reconvene back at 12:45 if the board and them are here. Ms. Horth?
Okay, for lunch break, but I mentioned earlier I would like to provide a report under item 5, which I missed. So
yeah, and I apologize for that. I did a welcome but didn't offer directors an opportunity to do director reports or comments on meetings and things like that. So by all means, please.
I'll go ahead and start. On the 14th last week, some of you may have seen that I spoke at an aqua regulatory summit on both the kind of the evolution of the current groundwater management laws, but also as a commissioner provided an overview of the water storage investment program and the regulation process relative to SGMA. Then raced back to Fresno and participated in the Fresno workshop. I think the tone was an interesting tone. Let's just put it that way. And I think we learned some lessons. Just very significant emotion in the Fresno area. That's demonstrated by just the suffering that a lot of that area is enduring because of the drought, and translating that to wanting to share their concerns with us. And then on the 16th of October, which was last Friday, I sat on a panel with State Board member Didi Diadamo at an Aqua Region event in Visalia and just discussed generally the water storage investment program along with a number of other State Board activities, including the conservation standards and some of the water rights enforcement, just to help educate that local public agency community.
Commissioner Herrera?
I just have two meetings to report back on. On the 17th of September, I met with Juliet Christians Smith, I think is her last name, with the Union of Concerned Scientists, and she was, we met after the Water Commission to talk a little bit about the report that she presented to us. And then I too participated in the Clovis public meeting that was held last week, and that's all I have to report.
Mr. Quintero.
On Monday the 12th, I did a tour of the Byron Water Facility. It was really informative, and actually, Director Ball was there, and I actually got this little book, which I found invaluable, which is a data handbook, which is actually all the information on the water infrastructure of California, and I think every commissioner should get a copy of this if possible. It's an amazing little pocket guide. But anyway, the tour was great. And it was very informative, and then that evening I participated in the meeting at Lafayette. It was a very good meeting, and some of the same issues that sounded like they were raised at Clovis were raised in Lafayette, but at a quieter level, I think. That's it.
Commissioner Ball and then Commissioner Daniels.
I was with Commissioner Quintero at the both the Banks pumping station and the Skinner facility, the screening facility. In reviewing that, I found it interesting that all the pumps were shut down. There's absolutely no pumping that is occurring during the day. So they pretty much regulate the water flow at different points down the California aqueduct. They said they do some pumping at night, but it's limited. One of the interesting things that was reported on is that if you go back a couple of years ago, when we were made aware of the fact that electrical workers working on the large pumps going through their apprentice program were leaving almost as soon as they left that program. And the reason for that was a disparity in the wages that were paid by the state of California versus what they could get out in the private sector. That was one of the first things that we as a commission took on, advocated for that to the governor. And there were changes made to the pay scale. And I'm happy to report now that apprentices coming out of the program are now staying there and working there, and we figure that's saving a substantial amount of money. So I think that the commission should be made aware of the fact that that action that we took is having a direct benefit to the California Water Project.
Well, I don't have anything near as interesting to report as that, but I generally have a number of speaking engagements, but when I'm asked to speak specifically as a water commissioner, I'll report those. I think otherwise not, right? So on September 30th, I spoke at the RAND Corporation at an event that was eventually podcast, and Tim Quinn was another speaker, as well as the head of the California Farm Bureau and somebody from RAND, and it was entirely about water. I met with, and I don't remember the date right now, but I met with Mike Roos and Bob Foster, who was the former mayor of Long Beach, about Semitropics project. It was an office meeting. They didn't realize that I'd already been to the project, so we just had a discussion about it. And then I recently published a blog. I have a HuffPo blog on gray water conservation and used my title as a water commissioner. And I just was urging cities in California to use gray water, particularly office buildings, and possibly use it in dual plumbing for water conservation purposes, and applauded the work of San Francisco along those lines and urged Los Angeles to follow suit. Yes.
Commissioner Bosky.
I was asked to speak at in Hanford, a meeting of the California League of Cities. Just a brief update of the drought in the San Joaquin Valley and a brief overview of the water storage investment program.
And I don't remember the dates either, but I spoke at Temple Emmanuel in Los Angeles as a water commissioner with a panel of folks, including the Israeli Council General, which was interesting to get the Israeli perspective on water. And then I also spoke at an energy water summit in Palm Springs on a panel with Felicia Marcus maybe 2 weeks ago, which was also very interesting. So that's it for me. Any other member comments? All right. Well, if it's okay, why don't we break for lunch? And if people are here, why don't we... Do we want to reconvene at 12:45 if folks are here, or we want to just go to 1? Yeah, if the agenda says 1, we should just go to 1. Okay. All right, so we'll have an extended lunch today then. So we will stand in recess until 1 o'clock.